What is the normal work hours, a typical normal worker for the average American worker in this new digitized workplace?
I couldn't tell you. I mean,
make a guess.
It's not 9 to 5.
It's not 9 to 5. There's a dramatic change in the nature of work.
Yep.
We all have to be aware of that. And society has to, the lawmakers have to be aware. It's not a typical workday. There is no more typical workday.
Back in 1933 or in there to 1945, then Roosevelt, actually, and a senator called Francis Perkins came up with a Fair Labor Standards Act. So back in 1945 or 1933, in that time frame. So you're absolutely correct. It needs to be redone. Unions. I know they used to be, they were built during the Industrial Revolution, and unions became pretty big. But in the last 40 years, you know, union membership has been cut in half. Is there a future for unions anymore? Or is that something that's going to be gone and extinct?
Employees are going to think they're getting a good deal out of this because they don't have to, they can work in their pajamas and they can do all these things. And whether they're on camera or not, who knows if they're actually working. So maybe employees are taking advantage, or maybe they're being taken advantage of. But what you're saying is that we need a new definition of fair.
It's in the interest of employers to keep this whole confusion. Keep the confusion going, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because if the congressman get up, wake up and start making legal steps, taking legal steps, passing legislation to reduce the confusion, the so-called victims of those legislation will become employers.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the New World of Work podcast. We're happy to have you along, and we are excited about our book and want you guys to have a copy yourself. Be sure to look in the description of this video and this podcast for information on how to get to our website, newworldpeoplespecialists.com, newworldpeoplespecialists.com. Make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, make a comment, like, all those things, share it along. The concepts of this book are spreading like wildfire. They are relevant to today's topics. And what our book does is actually bring all that chatter, all that talk into one consolidated book. And so it's very exciting. And today's episode is no different. We are going to be talking about obsolete labor laws. We have Dr. Robert Ramirez here and our expert, Dr. Bob Biswas. Dr. Bob has got an extensive background in labor laws, HR, all sorts of things. And so we're going to enjoy breaking this topic down today. So Dr. Bob, I wanted to hear from you. It's a story to get us going.
Yeah, the first thought that comes to mind, in the late 1940s, a landmark labor legislation was passed by the U.S. Congress called the Fair Labor Standards Act. It was a very landmark legislation affecting working conditions of the American worker. A Fair Labor Standards Act is the law that guided overtime payment, okay, work hours. I'll come back to that. And it is also, I think, in the 60s, the Equal Pay Act was added to the Fair Labor Standards Act as an addendum. As an additional, it was a modifications of the Fair Labor Standards Act as an amendment to that law. So, Equal Pay Act, wage and hour laws, are all a product of the Fair Labor Standards Act. Now, if we dissect this further, okay, the Fair Labor Standards Act labor law suggests that, and I'm going to deep dive it, so bear with me. I'm going to deep dive on this issue. The Fair Labor Standards Act suggests or requires employers to pay overtime to those who are non-exempt, who are not exempt from the Fair Labor Standards Act. That's why they call it non-exempt. They are not exempt. Okay? So if they work 40 hours a week, and anything over 40 hours on a given day after 8 hours, the 9th, 10th, 12th, etc., has to be paid on time and a half. If they work at more than 12 hours, after 12 hours, it's double time, okay, in a given day. And if they work more than 40 hours a week, okay, on the Saturday, they get 1.5 times. If they work on Sunday, double time. The Fair Labor Standards Act qualifies people to be exempt from the law based on three tests. Most employers and most HR people don't know this also, but that's the law. I'll tell you why I know. I'll come back to that later. Okay. So the three exemption tests are managerial exemption, professional exemption, and technical exemption. What is this exemption? If you supervise, manage, control, evaluate performance, and make decisions on salaries of two or more people, you can qualify for the managerial exemption. That's what the law says. Administrative exemption. If you make administrative policy, if you create administrative policy, etc., and less than 80% of your time you spend on routine regular work, okay, then you can qualify for the administrative exemption and be called exempt. And technical exemption, you have to have an engineering degree or technical know-how organized to be get the technical exemption. Okay, I made it simple. The law has three tests. There's a paper pencil test to qualify for these exemptions. Every HR department should be randomly doing these tests on their employees and keeping them in the personnel file. This is a requirement of the law. I would say majority of HR departments don't do it. They wake up when an employee files a wage and hour complaint, which is under the control of I think in California, it's the control of one state agency. I forgot what that agency. They make a complaint to that agency, and then they start an investigation, and then you can get fined. I know much about this law when I worked in the Bechtel Compensation Division. Bechtel is the world's largest construction company, right? American company constructing the whole world. Bechtel constructed the Bay Bridge, the Golden Gate Bridge, Hoover Dam, whatever, everything. So they were doing the Alaska pipeline, Robert. Building the Alaska pipeline. And they were using quality inspectors inspecting the pipeline. And the inspectors file a complaint and saying, we are doing 80%, more than 80% of our time, we are doing routine work. When we check, there's a book, we follow the book. We don't create anything as we inspect. We are doing regular automatic. So we need to be paid overtime. Correct? And they won the case. So it was a huge cost for Bechtel, right? Paying all these people who go walk around the pipeline to check everything. they had to be paid overtime. Similarly, the electronic gaming companies, I think is what Electronic Arts is, like a gaming company, Bill.
Yeah, that's
right. That was the company. These programmers, coders, they have to be busy before the season, Christmas season, before the electronic exposition happens, the big electronic exposition. Because then they have to sell the new games, right? So they work night and day coding. And they file a complaint saying that coding is routine also. You know, we follow protocols and do A plus B equals C. So we don't create any rules or regulations. We are not being creative. They also won the case. And the company had to pay a lot of back wages with penalties. So, why I say all this? In the old days, Fair Labor Standard Act clearly dictated to the workday and what is excess from the workday and therefore needs overtime. In the gig economy, do you know how many hours each one employee is working in their home? And who's monitoring their hours? Are they submitting time cards? How accurate are the time cards? Are they exempt administrative, professional, or technical? So the work day in this new age of work, new world of work, is not as the same as the work day in 1948. Hmm. Things have changed. The working environment has changed. Therefore, Fair Labor Standards Act, a major labor legislation, needs revision, wouldn't you say? That's how far the labor laws are. Hasn't kept up with the changing nature of work. That's the topic of our chapter. In a long way, I've explained why we wrote this chapter. And just to wake up Congress, to wake up, instead of bickering among themselves, they should wake up and see they have work to do. They have to update these labor laws to the changing nature of work.
Well, let's get into the spirit of these laws. We've been writing this book, I've thought of this topic quite a bit. I come from business ownership standpoint, executive leadership, managerial excellence, all these things. And so I think in kind of different stages of the world of work, pre-industrial revolution, maybe even back to agrarian societies, where me and my family, we have a house, we've got to go find our own food, we've got to sustain our own life, right? Then the industrial revolution happens. And as that same person that has that house that's trying to just take care of myself, is very attractive to go get consistent work at a factory that I know I'm going to get paid a normal wage. I don't have the ebbs and flows of being my own off-grid type person. And so now fast forward to really the third industrial revolution, business ownership became a very exciting thing, the American dream of being your own boss and working however many hours you want to work. You can work more or less or whatever. And then now we have this opportunity for gig work, where maybe gig workers of today used to be the guys that find side jobs here or there, put together a living. But we have so many opportunities at every level to be a gig worker and to work those long hours, right? Work those long hours. So, Dr. Bob, what is the purpose of Fair Labor Law? The Fair Labor Standards Act?
Before I answer that question, I'm asking both of you.
Okay.
What is the normal work hours, a typical normal worker for the average American worker in this new digitized workplace?
I couldn't tell you. I mean.
Make a guess.
It's not 9 to 5.
It's not 9 to 5, right? So it's something else, right?
Yeah.
But those laws assume, the Fair Labor Standards Act assumes the old 8-hour workday, right?
Clock in at 9, take lunch at 12, come back from lunch at 1. The business is shut down, right? They're not open on Sunday. They're not open 24 hours. Everyone supposedly had this 9-to-5 job.
There's a dramatic, my friends. That's why we wrote the book. There's a dramatic change in the nature of work.
Yep.
We all have to be aware of that. And society has to, the lawmakers have to be aware. It's not the typical workday. There is no more typical workday. Lots of technology, knowledge workers work on demand. What they call that? Asynchronous, not asynchronous.
Asynchronous, yeah.
Asynchronous, when they have to work. For example, if you're in a technical job, you have global work teams. And the guys in Czechoslovakia who work in the same team called a meeting at their 10 hours, 10 a.m. their time. For the American worker, depending on the time zone, that might be midnight. So their asynchronous workplace is people work and they have to. There is no fixed hours of work. And that we are sitting with a labor law that assumes there's a fixed work day, hours in a day. It is so obsolete. I think I made the case already. It is so obsolete. The labor laws need to be updated. What is the question you asked, Bill?
What is the purpose, original purpose? What's the spirit of the Labor Act? Was it to
prevent prevent employers exploiting their workers.
Okay, I thought so. And so there was this breakdown, I guess, in the labor ownership employer relations, in which the employer was saying, we need to get this work done. We're going to pay you this rate that we all agreed on. And if you want, you can work 12 hours and I'll pay you 12 hours time your hourly rate. And so the government had to step in to protect the worker from getting wore out or feeling they had to take regular pay for 12 hours. I'll juxtaposition that, Dr. Bob, with the Uber driver I rode in his car last week. He says, man, I've been working for Uber for 5 years. It's fantastic. I work 5 days for 12 hours and I can make enough money that I don't have to work the next 2 days. And if I want to take my family to the beach, I just work a couple of days here or there and then I can take a week off. Yeah.
Time out, Bill. My purpose here is to make people think out of the box.
Right.
He said, the Uber driver said, I work for Uber for 5 days. I work for Uber for 5 years.
He doesn't work for Uber, right?
Does he really work for Uber?
He works for himself.
So why did he tell you that he works for Uber?
That's right. Well, he correct. Because Uber is the, I think going back to last week, it's the human cloud that connects him to clients, right? So it's confusing because in my mind, Uber drivers are what maybe we used to call self-employed. It's just that they have this way of this phone talking to potential client passengers. And so he has to pay a little bit to Uber for this technology, but Uber's not going to be liable if he does something completely wrong or like, right? There's some limited rules there too.
Right. Bill and Bob, you might know better. California, a few years ago, passed
ABC, AB5.
What is that name?
AB5.
Do you know what AB5 said?
Yeah.
Tell me what it said. It
said Uber workers are not contractors, that they're actually part-time employees. had an ABC test where the state of California was saying if you you can only consider an Uber driver or somebody else an independent contractor if they satisfy these three tests, ABC tests, different than your three you were talking about earlier. Do you remember what they are, Dr. Bob, the ABC?
No, remind me.
Okay, so it means the A says that the person is, I'm going to read it here. The person is independent of the hiring organization in connection with the performance of the work, both under the contract for the performance of work and in fact. The person performs work that is outside the hiring entity's business. And the person, C, the person is routinely doing work in an independently established trade, occupation, or business that is the same as the work being requested and performed.
So what did that initiative say is the legal status of these people?
Right.
Are they, what is the legal status? Are they employees?
They are basically trying to say that, so what was happening is independent contract, or employers, business owners were trying to get work done at a lower rate, right? So they hire, instead of hiring full-time employees with benefits and all these insurance, all these things, they were hiring contract workers, Uber being an example of that. And so all they would do is at the end of the year, send a 1099 out to these workers, and the company benefited from their productivity. The employee was happy, not employee, the contractor was happy. But California is saying, you're exploiting these guys. You're calling them contractors, okay. And they're not contractors. They're employees.
What was the outcome, the specific outcome of that initiative?
So you have to prove that they're not an employee. Otherwise, by default, you better treat them as an employee.
And do what?
Withhold taxes and all these benefits you got after think the
so here's my question. There's a purpose to my madness.
You're definitely mad.
So I said, as what you said, they are employees. So if that Uber worker drives for Uber for 12 consecutive hours, are they now supposed to get time and a half for that?
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah. Sure? And then they're restricted, but from what I've heard from Uber drivers is that that's not the case. They're still getting paid. And they say you could shut it off and that's a break and then you come back on. And
here's the my method to my madness. The reason we wrote this chapter is to make people aware there's high level of confusion in this new age of work with labor laws. So California passes a initiative applied to California employees only, California Uber employees only, that they'll be employees. There has not been any integration with labor federal legislation. Under the general legal concept, whenever there's a state law and in employment condition, when there's a state law and a federal law, the federal law supersedes. So I'm not a lawyer. I want to ask my lawyer friends, does that mean, because California passed a resolution, it's really a political move, nothing else? Because in a sense, the federal legislation still controls, correct? The Fair Labor Standards Act, right?
Yeah.
So there's a level of confusion with labor law. I don't know how HR people are navigating it.
I think you hit it exactly on the news. Exactly as it is. We have so many issues with the laws that have had to change or that have not changed throughout all these years. And as we move into the digital age, states are doing it differently. California is doing it different than Nevada and Texas and whatnot. And this, as you just pointed out, you've got the national laws and then you've got state laws. And and who's on first base, who's over who, and there's a lot of confusion within the companies. How do we pay these employees? What do we need them to do? Are they honest about what they submit in terms of number time? And if they're working from 8 o'clock in the morning through 9 o'clock at night, how do we enforce that they're taking breaks? There's so many questions. I hope you have some answers.
Me? Listen, another question, Bob. You'll relate to this. EEOC legislation, which is an amendment to the Fair Labor Standards Act and the Civil Rights Act, these are federal laws, right, that apply to employees who are employees under the definition of Fair Labor Standards Act. So they were, those employees are protected by EEOC legislation. Are your employees protected by those legislation also? In California, what Bill just told me, they are employees in California. Are they protected by the EEOC federal legislation? Can somebody please answer this?
Well, I every Uber driver I ask claims they're not. So they look at me as if I have two heads. When I ask them, aren't you an employee of Uber? Like, what do you mean? I work when I want to work. How I want to work. If I don't want to drive around drunk people, I just turn on my phone in the morning. And some of them have two phones. They have Uber and Lyft. And so they go back and forth. And they're out there in what a lot of gig workers are called, doing a side hustle. They don't want to be full-time employees. They don't want the restrictions of the Fair Labor Standards Act, Dr. Bob. They don't want the restrictions.
But the California made them employees, right?
Yeah, we have a similar problem with in universities now with part-time professors. You have to pay part-time professors by the hour. The university doesn't like it. The professor doesn't like it. I don't know who likes it. But they are turning professionals into part-time workers that have to punch a card. And the nature of that work just doesn't work at all. Then you've got, the book, Dr. Bob, you talked about Marco Rubio trying to get a law passed on paying people more, right? The RAISE Act. What's that all about? Do you?
On the top of the head, I don't remember right now.
I'm looking at it again. But I think it was something.
This area of labor legislation is very confusing.
It was not allowing people to get merit-based pays.
Marco Rubio's attempt wasn't passed.
Correct.
He attempted to pass the legislation.
I think it had something to do with you're in a union shop and you do a really good job as a worker. They're not allowed to pay you more. And so they were trying to find a way, you know, around collective bargaining. To where merit-based pay could be
something. Am I right? I think that law didn't get passed.
It didn't get passed, no.
So,
because they're using...
Marco Rubio is trying to make some changes into the labor laws, right?
Right.
At least he's trying. Yep. He's a senator from Florida, so...
Another thing you mentioned was... union workers giving places to meet. So you're back in the factory days, the bosses couldn't spy on the workers as they were organizing. But now all the organizing of workers happens on Facebook and email and text messages. But the company makes employees sign all these things, all these contracts that say, all your conversation is property of the company. So they don't give these people protective private spaces to organize anymore either.
That's a different area, the unionization proceedings in the new digital age. That's a different area. a whole new discussion, which we might land up with 1.5 hours. but staying on wage and hour laws, okay, confusion abounds. So in our book, the chapter we wrote was just an awareness chapter. Don't ask us authors for solutions. None of the three of us are U.S. congressmen or U.S. senators. All we are doing in that chapter is making the readers aware of the confusion in labor legislation and the need to the U.S. Congress and the U.S. Senate to start clearing some of this confusion, okay, in the new world of work, how these laws, they apply to the new world of work. That's the question that needs to be answered. And I hope that at least that chapter is read by some of the U.S. congressmen and senators so they get busy and clear some of this confusion, because I am totally confused how these labor legislation, especially wage and hour laws, apply in the new digital age. And it's confusion, like Bill is saying. We don't know. The Uber employee says, I'm not an employee, this and that. Utter confusion.
Yeah, they're still saying they're
going to. I'll give you another example. You might not know about this. Another amendment to the Fair Labor Standard Act is called the Portal to Portal Act. You heard of that, Bill?
You mentioned it on a previous podcast, but go ahead and bring it up again. This one is interesting.
Portal to Portal Act under the Fair Labor Act says, if Bob Ramirez is asked by his employer to go to a work site to work, not a main work location, but his job is to go to a work site, do his work, and then come back home. He's not going to the company's location, he's going to work site. They are required to be paid from the time Bob leaves his house. His workday starts when he leaves his house and when he comes back. Not just the work hours he's spending in the work site. The commuting hours are supposed to be paid, added to the workday. How many people are following that law? I wonder.
You just reminded me of this, because the Uber driver I was talking to the other day, we had a long car ride, because I got a lot of questions in. I'm a curious passenger. But he was saying that he's been doing this for a while. So his CPA says, I want you to write down every mile you drive, the Lysol you use in your car, keep a receipt of that, keep a log. At the end of the year, give them to me and I'll sort all this stuff out. And he said, because when you're an Uber driver, you don't get paid to go drive to the place where that person is. So from my house to where my first passenger is at is not paid or accounted for in Uber's reporting system. So if I just go off my Uber app and say, these are the miles that I drove for work, it's going to be grossly understated.
Bill, you just defined the confusion.
Yeah.
You just said California made them employees. If they're employees, then they are subject to the Portal to Portal Act. That's what seems to me.
Mm-hmm. So Uber is not paying them to drive to the first spot.
So
It used to be Dr. Bob, and you're a Bakersfield, California driver. You might get a call to pick someone up, and they want you to take them to the Los Angeles airport. Now you're in L.A., you're stuck there. You got to drive yourself back on your own dime, right? So
unless you get a ride from L.A. to Bakersfield.
Back to Bakersfield. But it's...
I think I convinced you that there's confusion, right? In labor legislation.
So, Bill, I was talking to an Uber driver as well just the other day. And it was a female, and she said that Uber and Lyft were actually the same company. They're made to look like different companies so that there's competition. But if you look into the details, and look at the addresses and look at the legalese, they're really the same company, but they have different benefits. They get different paychecks, but it's to give the appearance of competition. I thought that was interesting. I don't know if that's true or not. I want to check it out. But
I have a tremendous opportunity. My old vehicle, my 1986 Toyota 4Runner, broke completely, and it's undrivable. And so my wife and I will be buying a newer car. And so I figured I'm going to go do this myself. So as soon as we get our new car, our new used car, I'm going to sign up for Uber and do some driving on the side just to see what it is, you know, have some fun. I actually thought as a professor, maybe I could do some research with passengers while I'm driving them around.
Yeah. Dr. Bob, I also wanted to ask you, unions. I know they used to be, they were built during the Industrial Revolution, and unions became pretty big. But in the last 40 years, union membership has been cut in half. Is there a future unions anymore, or is that something that's going to be gone and extinct?
You broke up a little bit, so repeat your question.
So the question is there still a place for unions, or is that going to be gone as well?
Very good question. Very good question. First, we need to sort out whether these people are employees or not.
Because you can't protect them if they're not employees, right?
Right. And they can't form an employee a union if they're not employees.
So
that union legislation also. The labor legislation, union legislation needs to be updated also with the changing nature of who's an employee, who's not an employee, who can organize, who cannot organize. So, as I said, caveat, disclaimer, our chapter, we don't have any answer on this issue, the three of us, because you have to elect us to be a congressman. To give you an answer.
My sense of it, Dr. Bob.
We just asked the questions.
Yeah, my sense of it, Dr. Bob, is that the surge of gig workers and the gig economy suggests that people don't want to be constrained by labor laws. They don't want to be, they don't, either they want to work.
Who are these people who don't want to be constrained?
Gig workers. They want to work when they want to work, right?
These legislation, labor legislation, were to develop to protect employee rights, okay, give them their rights. Because the employers, before these legislations were passed, were exploiting the workers.
Correct. But they also are limiting their opportunity, right? So if I wanted to work 12 hours, because, for example, when when my son was working for Taco Bell, they were very strict to not ever let him get more than 30 hours, because if they did, they now had to pay him benefits, right? They had to give him insurance if he worked a day over 30 hours. And so
they
watched him like a hawk to not do that. So what if he wanted to work 40 hours? He can't. He had to go get two jobs to work more time. So a gig worker can go off and escape the constraints of Fair Labor Standards
Act. I have to tell you, my friend, what your statement that you just made, okay, is not the employee. It's not that they don't want the protections of labor legislation. Employers don't want to be subjected to the restrictions of labor legislation. So it's in the interest of employers to keep this whole confusion, keep the confusion going, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because if the congressman wake up and start making legal steps, passing legislation to reduce the confusion, the so-called victims of those legislation will become employers. Who are hiring these different digital types of digital workers. So this whole area, by legislation in the new age of work, is really another topic of a big book, okay? Huge book. The guide map, the roadmap for US Congress to deal with this labor legislation in the new age of work, in the new age of digital work. It is really a very badly needed public interest initiative that needs to be started. The great American labor legislation movement was started by some landmark senators and congressmen, right? I don't remember their names off the top of my head, but many, many of these congressmen took the leadership. Legislators took the leadership and started writing the legislation that was required to give employer protections. The new age of digital work. We need a champion, national leader, to take it upon themselves to write the blueprint for the labor legislation, for labor legislation of the future.
Yeah, I'm sitting here as a remote worker. I've been doing this pre-pandemic even. And I know millions of people became remote workers who, and the employers at first were a little bothered by it, but then they realized, wait, we don't have to pay for air conditioning or heat or power. Our employees are going to think they're getting a good deal out of this because they don't have to, they can work in their pajamas and they can do all these things. And whether they're on camera or not, who knows if they're actually working. So maybe employees are taking advantage, or maybe they're being taken advantage of. But what you're saying is that we need a new definition of fair. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. And just to stir the pot more, professors are the persons who stir the pot. Right?
Yep.
So to speak, with the new digital worker, remote worker, gig worker, all these new terms, flexible workers, flexible employees, contingent employees who work from home. What, if any, are the implications of workers' compensation?
Yeah.
If I... sitting at work, at home and working, having my meeting, of which I have many during the day, on remotely, on Zoom and WebEx and all. And something falls from my bookshelf, the whole bookshelf falls on me, and I get very badly hurt. Is California workers' compensation going to apply?
Well, I know your homeowners will not want to cover it. Your employer's insurance will not. They'll all fight of who is not responsible. And eventually they'll say, that was your fault that you didn't secure that bookshelf that well. It's your bookshelf. It's not the company's bookshelf. Why are you sitting so close? But what are we going to do? Do orientations in our house, carrying a camera around and checking for... slip, if I go in and I mop my floor during when I'm getting lunch and I come out and I slip in the floor, do I get to get
lost? California workers' compensation is a very progressive and very, very comprehensive and very strict law, okay?
Yeah.
For protecting workers' right on job place, in job workplace injuries, right?
Yeah.
But my workplace, your workplace, Bob's workplace, although he looks like he's sitting in a fancy office, but he doesn't want to show you the true nature of his workplace. It's not the workplace. It is the home/workplace.
Yes.
What? How should the workers' compensation legislation be modified?
Well, Dr. Bob, in a couple of weeks, my workplace is going to be in an Orlando hotel. So now what, right? I'm going to be working in a hotel with my wife at a conference. And because I can work from home, I can work from anywhere. I could be in the back of my RV as my wife's driving down the road doing work. And we get in a car crash. What the heck? Who covers that then? Right? So,
good question.
I think in conclusion, all we can say, reflecting on this chapter, that we have made people, the readers, aware of the fact that in the new world of work, in the digital workspace, the labor legislation are lagging way behind.
Yeah.
Dr. Bob, I was going to say that it was back in 1933 or in there to 1945 that Roosevelt, actually, and a senator called Francis Perkins came up with a Fair Labor Standards Act. So back in 1945 or 1933, in that time frame. So you're absolutely correct. It needs to be redone.
It was for an industrial age, and we are in the gig economy now. Well, guys, we have two more chapters to go in the book. So two more podcasts on two more episodes on this book. The next one is on analytics and measurement, people analytics. And then the chapter 16, our last chapter we're reviewing, is putting it all together. So wrapping all that up. But our audience, our followers have a treat coming up, because as we get through those last couple of chapters, we have guests lined up now to come in and talk to us and go over some of these same topics. We'll also be building a library of kind of definitions, kind of like Instapedia or Investopedia, where future generations that are taking classes or something can Google a certain term, and our videos will show up as the definition of these terms. So we're excited about that. We'll be keeping you guys updated on any speaking engagements we have going on. And we are available for coaching as well. So you can get into contact with us through our website at any time. So looking forward to hearing from each of you. And we'll see you guys next time. Thank you, guys.
Until next week.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on the New World of Work podcast. Be sure to subscribe and share the podcast, and to pick up a copy of our book, The New World of Work, People Leadership in the Digital Age. You can purchase it and connect with us by going to our website at www.newworldpeoplespecialist.com.